On February 11 this year, a student press conference on this campus was broken up by approximately 100 supporters of the York Student Federation. About 40 students who organized the press conference felt threatened and fled to the campus Hillel offices, where they locked themselves in. According to one report of a visiting professor, the YSF supporters banged on the door and windows of the offices, shouted threatening comments at the students trapped inside. The students in the Hillel headquarters appealed to the campus security for assistance, but received none. They then called the Toronto police, who eventually arrived to escort them out the offices through lines of hostile YSF supporters chanting angry slogans and hurling insults at them. In response to this and perhaps other offensive incidents, York President Shoukry delivered a statement to the University Senate on February 26, in which he said, quote, "Our students are faced with a barrage of disruption, hostility, and even intimidation from their fellow students. This state of affairs is unacceptable to me," end of quote. He offered a couple of suggestions about how York could deal with tough issues. This debate is a result of what President Shoukry had in mind. In fact, this is the third separate event on the topic of academic boycotts against Israel. And today I learned that this is the third hour out of 7 hours on conflicts in the world. Israel deserves 3 hours out of seven of all the conflicts in all the world. To my knowledge, no debates are scheduled on academic boycotts against any other nation. Not against Russia to protest its invasion of Georgia, or against Iran, which has repeatedly called for the destruction of Israel, or against numerous other nations guilty of abuses of human rights. There is no call to boycott the Islamic University of Gaza that has been accused by Palestinian President Abbas of storing and hiding weapons and munitions, and was also one of the places where the kidnapped Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit was held captive for months. And of course, there are other topics that could be debated on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. For example, whether Hamas is interested in peace with Israel, when its founding charter calls for Israel's destruction and states, and I'm quoting now from the charter, "Initiatives and so-called peaceful solutions at international conferences are in contradiction to the principles of the Islamic resistance movement. There is no solution for the Palestinian question except through jihad. Initiatives, proposals, and international conferences are all a waste of time and vain endeavors." So it is reasonable to ask, why are we debating academic boycotts? Is this a sincere exercise, or is it more likely the case that this issue is merely a cover or an excuse to demonize Israel or its right to exist? I will not play this game. Instead, I will focus on academic boycotts per se and spend my remaining time to explain why they are a danger to the university and to our democracy, and are not redeemed by beliefs about the alleged unworthiness of its target. To understand the danger academic boycotts present, we have to understand why we have universities. Let me read the mission statement from my university that was formulated in 1997 and is typical of many other such statements. Quote, "The University of Western Ontario is dedicated to the advancement of learning through teaching and research and to the discovery and application of knowledge. The university seeks to provide an environment of free and creative inquiry within which critical thinking, humane values, and practical skills are cultivated and sustained. By pursuing these objectives, the university endeavors to serve the interests of society." Note the last sentence. It stresses that the university serves society by doing its job of seeking, disseminating, and applying knowledge. It does not say that the university's main job is to pursue political or social ends that society, its political leaders, or groups of citizens promote. Its role is to seek truth so that others, including elected governments, can make informed judgments. The university is the only institution in society whose job is truth-seeking. And its method of doing so is to argue the merits of conflicting ideas by using logic, experimentation, and evidence. Thus, the first danger of an academic boycott is that it undermines the integrity of the university by turning it into a partisan for one side or another. In such a situation, the university can no longer be counted on as an honest truth generator. It will become increasingly seen by citizens as a lackey of government or of some other force in society. In short, it will become Sovietized and serve ideological aims that brook no dissent. Do you want your children to be educated or indoctrinated? A second danger of academic boycotts is that it violates academic freedom. According to the CAUC policy statement, the CAUC policy statement on academic freedom, the core functions of a university, as discussed earlier, cannot be achieved without academic freedom. Among the many things academic freedom includes, according to CAUC, is that has the right without restriction by prescribed doctrine to freedom of teaching and discussion, freedom in carrying out research and disseminating and publishing the results thereof, freedom from institutional censorship, and freedom to participate in professional and representative academic bodies. Academic boycotts also violate the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, specifically Section 2 on fundamental freedoms of expression and association. Thus, if an academic boycott were enacted at York, your university, it would be contrary to academic freedom because it would prevent collaboration of York professors and students with scholars of the targeted university, and also limit your freedom to participate in conferences in the banned country. It would enforce a prejudged official university position on, say, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Academic boycotts restrain a university's own professoriate in the service of a political goal. And if an academic boycott means that you can't collaborate with or visit professors in the banned country, how long will it take before York professors were no longer able to study or write about issues in the banned country, unless, of course, their findings were suitably negative? It is your freedom, you and the audience, that would be put in jeopardy. A third reason to resist academic boycotts is because they assault the dignity of the individual. In the United Kingdom, an owner and editor of an academic journal fired two members of the journal's board because they were Israeli. A professor at Oxford rejected an Israeli applicant for graduate study and told the applicant it was because he was Israeli. Once academic boycotts establish the rule that academic decisions may be made for reasons of nationality, divorced from considerations of normal academic criteria, we are in danger of, in Peter Wood's words, reducing the individual scholar to an indistinguishable hireling of an institution. Proponents of academic boycotts like to claim the high moral ground, but paradoxically, they do not recognize that they have weakened the case of other groups, for example, women and visible minorities, by making the argument that people are not separate from their membership in some larger group. Accordingly, people have no claim to individual consideration. The argument appears to be that all decisions are political and normal academic criteria are discarded. In such an environment, those in power can exclude whomever they want on political grounds, whether they are Israeli, women, or visible minorities. Principled, merit-based arguments have been ruled out of order. This leads to a fourth reason to oppose academic boycotts. They use force instead of reason to compel others to toe the party line. Presumably, in a university that has enacted a boycott, professors who have committed the moral crime of collaborating with a banned scholar would be punished. What, one wonders, would be a suitable punishment? Re-education? Placement in stocks? Flogging? In short, an academic boycott teaches that might makes right, and breeds intolerance of the opinions of others with whom we disagree. I predict it will lead to more violent episodes of the sort I described at the beginning of my remarks. In fact, it may turn the university into nothing more than political theater. Academic boycotts are not a precise surgical instrument that may influence the policies of a targeted country, but rather they are a blunt instrument that absolutely damages our own universities and thus our own country. In the end, academic boycotts are best described as acts of academic cannibalism, in which some academics devour other academics in order to demonstrate their moral superiority and their allegiance to the political fads of the day. Support for academic boycotts is support for an Orwellian dystopia. And in that dystopia, Big Brother is always watching, making sure one's research comes out right to corroborate the prevailing dogma. That is not a university that best serves our students or our country. It is not a university of any kind. An academic boycott is the poison a so-called university takes to kill its ideological enemies. Thank you.